scheduled for today to deal with student achievement and thoughts about our direction in the future in terms of, do we want to identify some other areas of competency that we'd like our high school graduates to have. I know some of us during National School Board meeting in San Diego, you know, the portrait of a graduate, you know, Greg and I've read the book, Bucky read part of it, just give us some insight. And the superintendent can speak to this more, but you know, we did the original 7 years ago, mm-hmm. with the caveat that, you know, future things may be tweaked, may change. So I guess that's kind of what the discussion is
yeah.
today.
When we developed this 7 years ago, as we were talking with teachers and parents, et cetera, one of the things we said, you just know, the ACT, it's one measure of student achievement. As we progress as a district and we see where things are, we might reach a point where we feel like it's not the best indicator, and there's some other things that we feel might more accurately reflect our students' achievement, might be better targets for us to shoot for. We're at that point where I think it's time to have that discussion, tying into with some of the things that our state's doing with Portrait of a Graduate, how they're tying that into student achievement, some of the things we've learned at NSBA. So really the purpose of tonight is just to have some initial conversation of what do we want to do in terms of our student learning targets that we're working towards as a district long term. Do we want to do something that's really just another measurement? Like maybe we're saying instead of ACT or even in addition to ACT goals, we're setting a goal of, you know, a certain percentage of our students will have a post-high school plan that they work on with their counselors and says, here's what I'm going to do when I'm going to a university, when I'm going to BTEC, whether I'm, you know, whatever the plan is, that they've got something identified, that they have a path figured out. That we, one other idea would be that we say every graduate, you know, we talk about different achievement things here, we say that every graduate will graduate from Logan High School with a combination of AP, concurrent enrollment, CTE, and BTEC classes, and whatever that looks like based on their college readiness plan and their goals. Or we could go down the route of really looking at something like a Portrait of a Graduate. You have a copy of Utah's Portrait of a Graduate in your papers there. It is a multifaceted Portrait of a Graduate, probably one of the, well, not probably, it's
29
pages. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and here are the
comprehensive,
the competency rubrics, you know, for each grade band, saying here's how we measure this in kindergarten, here's how we measure this in third grade, etc. As I've looked around, I think the Utah one has the most components out of any high school or public school system Portrait of a Graduate I've seen. Most of them are between 5, 4, and 7. The advantages to using something like Portrait of a Graduate, specifically Utah's version, are a couple. One, in the upcoming version of school accountability, one of the indicators of school accountability will be a set of optional indicators. And on that list is something where the school district can decide, okay, for next year, we're going to collect data on this element of the Portrait of a Graduate. And which element that is completely up to the district. How they'll collect information is up to the district. But it is something that's coming down the pike in terms of the accountability system. The state has also put a lot of work already into fleshing this out, into what it would look like, and some support resources. So although I would not be in a position where I'd be advising and say, hey, we should adopt the USBE Portrait of a Graduate wholesale, because it is pretty expansive, there may be some tools that we would want to use. The other part of if we chose to go the route of a Portrait of a Graduate approach, you know, one of the things we need to decide is who needs to be involved in that conversation, what stakeholders do we bring in, and how do we want to start that process. So that's kind of the context for tonight's conversation. Really, we just want to begin by saying where do we want student achievement to go as part of our long-term targets? And then how do we want to express that? How do we communicate it? How do we put it together? So that's really the kind of the goal for to start us off this evening.
Are you thinking if we did a combination of this, that this replaces what we've been doing to this point? Is that the idea?
Or a hybrid or an extension of what we've already got?
Because I read that, like, did go on and look at this for a little bit. And like I said, it was big. I didn't spend a whole lot of time other than just browsing through it quick to see some of the components that you're talking about. But I kind of thought there might be a few things that we want to add to this flagship, but I don't know that I was quite convinced that our flagship didn't cover some of these achievement areas that they were talking about. And like that book talks a lot about the need to bring the community in to determine what the employers out there really want from the capabilities of the student that we were producing for them. And so, I mean, I think we want to definitely, maybe if we'd spend some time going back and reviewing things, do that, try to make sure we're well grounded with a community effort here and get them to commit, some of these people, to go along with this for a long term and not just make it a one-time thing. But we talked about having job fairs and all these kinds of things with our high school age students, and have them come in and visit with middle school students about some of the things that's going on out there in their world, programming computers and some of the places that we have in town, whatever they're doing out there. There's lots and lots of options. But, you know, when you look at somebody that comes out and I was talking the other day with one of the HVAC employers in town. He says, I need him to be able to read really well. It sounded like the basic kinds of things that maybe writing or arithmetic that we did back when we were kids was really what he wanted the kids to come out with, because they got to have some abilities in that area. I mean, but that's going to be what attracts the kid, because he already has a sense to like to fix things. And he says, if you'll give me somebody that can read, that's a good person, we can teach them everything else that they need to know about this. And, you know, there's a lot of reading that they have to do to get trained and stay up on things. It's constantly
changing.
Yep, performance and new product, new things here, new capabilities. But I don't know that we can remake the machine that much. I think we've got a pretty good machine.
I think, you know, as you mentioned, I think it's important for us to create a dialogue with employers and community members in terms of what they view as our mission, so to speak. But, you know, to speaking to you, we can't constantly be changing with the workplace because we don't have the time and the resources, the expertise, but the basic skills, that's literacy, because
a lot of cases, math.
Yeah, I mean, certain academic skills aren't going to change, like literacy, reading. It's up to that employer maybe to give them specific skills for their specific job, but what are the basic things beyond math, reading, writing that we could do in school and in BTEC that they're one step ahead of other graduates from other high schools to get a job?
BTECs, so we definitely close to it. And I'd love to get Utah State somehow to get some of these departments up tied into us, so that, you know, if environmental sciences and some of these things are a big future area that kids are going to grow up in. You look at the water lab, and that thing is going to be critical in the future. And you know, you get with Campbell Scientific and all the stuff they do out there to try to measure the types of things that are going on. You know, when you look at the Colorado River Project, the major problem is agriculture. I mean, if we can figure out how to cut those farmers' needs back just a little bit, we can solve the problem on the river. Because, I mean, 85% of the water comes out here and goes to agriculture, and is it being only used? And probably not in all cases. So,
you know, the point of Campbell Scientific and going back to those partnerships, they donated a $14,000 weather station to the golf course. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see a weather station at our outdoor learning center from Camp.
Yeah, the kids go up there and learn. I'm sure they'd love that. Yeah.
But
we
also,
could do it in the right place.
But know, also bring their...
That, you could do that up that river and follow their work. And over the years, our kids could develop a real pattern of what's happening on that river with the water every year. And what kind of snow levels did we have this year? What did that produce in water runoff? And where did that runoff? Where did we lose it? Where did we... You know, there's just all kinds of wonderful things these kids can learn.
And it continues from generation to generation. I mean, Drew Nelson, our physics teacher, his wife's a water researcher. I mean, she's got her PhD, and I mean, she'd be a tie-in. Not only we have a weather station, but we have Utah State.
Yeah.
Say, take some of our AP kids up with one of your Utah State classes and say...
Werner Anderson's a retired guy, but I'll bet Werner would love to come into our high school and spend time talking about water. He would be a phenomenal resource to have a senior school. These are the kinds of things that we may want to look at trying to add. I get excited about the future. I think there's a lot of wonderful things. I mean, the digital literacy is another thing. It's got to be there. We just got to make sure we have that we're training kids in the areas that the university and Bridgerland and everybody else needs them to have those skills to go into their programs that they have.
Exactly.
See, I've become pretty tainted because of my experience down in Bridgerland. And becoming a convert to micro, for example, is philosophy. And I'm not sure he's not too far off of, you know, one of our biggest problems, especially in higher education, is that we're not responding well enough to what industry needs. I mean, we had a meeting last week where we had Doyle Beck come in and talk about the Police Academy out of Richmond. Mm-hmm. There are 400 jobs in the state of Utah right now for police officers, juvenile, whatever the case might be, and yet we're not even talking about those kind of opportunities in the classroom. I don't know how early we start talking to, you know, if we could get a sophomore in high school to start thinking about, you know, where do you want to be 5 years from now? Your objective short term is take this a piece at a time and try and get to graduation, but then have that pathway that you're talking about that is much more related to what's going on in the world around us. Because Utah State, you know, I'm a graduate, I've got a master's there, and I graduated in a degree that I never did a thing in. And that's 50% of the students at Utah State.
Because some careers and occupations aren't glamorous to a four-year institution. I mean, Weber has law enforcement, right? I don't know who else would have.
My son got a master's in criminal science from Weber and his work.
But you're right, and I'm as guilty as this. You know, it used to be 4 years of college, that was your way to success. We can't do that. We've got to start early saying we've got these options. If you want law enforcement, look what you can do in Logan High and then BTEC to get into that career early.
Yeah.
You know, I look at these yellow, blue, green, I could argue all of them. I mean, honestly, but how do we, I mean, see, I'd go to Greg, digital learning, literacy, and I agree with that, but I'm a big civic, financial, and economic literacy guy. I mean, I could argue. So how do we...
cause of divorce in America, so it'd be nice to fix some of that in our kids.
I mean, there's... And we can't do it all because I don't think we can spread ourselves that thin. Does that make sense? I mean, I'd like to. So what do we...
Well, I think we can do some things. As I hear this, I think a couple things that are coming into my mind is, one, we have the opportunity in our community to develop and work to create a lot of different partnerships. I think we need to decide, do we want to create the partnerships and then identify the purpose, or do we want to come up with a purpose first and then identify the partnerships that will help us move towards that purpose? I think there will be a tendency, especially as we start talking about things like Portrait of a Graduate, for people to feel like, well, we're going to pick a focus, and that is forevermore our focus. And I think one thing we can see is we can pick a couple things, say, okay, to start, we can't do 4, 8, 12, yeah. Well, 5, 6, 13. We can't do 13 indicators at once. But
you learn in kindergarten.
Right.
You would hope.
So we can say,
serve people.
Right.
And we're doing that with our clubs and everything they got going on. And I sit and listen to those Latino kids saying they're going in and meeting with kids in elementary school. You know, you don't have to sit and target these things because they naturally happen. You know, and how do you create a love for learning? I mean, Larry's probably helped create that as much as anybody because he sat there and read to those kids this summer.
Oh, it's...
And those kids, you know, they left that program, they went back into school, and they're getting read to again.
They want to get better.
And the love for learning is reading. If you can get kids to read, I think you just keep learning because of that. And then there's that element of discovery that comes into their lives. I want to, you know, I'm excited about it.
Which
world are we about? With Europe or whatever it is about.
I don't know that I've...
Hard work and resilience, for example, is one of those critical aspects.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to what Greg, growing up, I can remember 20 years ago and going to a Chamber of Commerce thing and a speaker said, schools need to be teaching hard work. And I'm sitting there thinking, I learned that at home.
Yeah.
I wasn't, you know, I learned.
But our society is
I know, and
completely
that's the challenge.
Blowing that out of the water.
That's the challenge.
That's what workers are saying is they can't get kids that want to work. People come, they show up for a week, and they're gone. So there's no resilience there.
So we got to buy a farm.
Well,
exactly. Well, we got to put those hay things away and let them buck the animals.
Buy a farm. I would move out there every summer.
I don't know if I've told you this.
Rise to sunset.
But listening to my uncle and my dad, who grew up on a farm, I always thought, I wish I knew how to do all these things that I know how to do. And I said that to him, and I said, we had to do it because there was nobody else to do it on the farm. We learned it. And I'm thinking, boy, I was spoiled.
Well, I wonder. I wonder sometimes if whether we really don't need to pick a focus and we don't need to worry about assessing it. But what if something like the Portrait of a Graduate just became something we talked about regularly? What if it was just something we were frequently saying, look, we know these are all important. Can we talk as schools, can we talk as faculties, you know, teachers and principals, and just say, how are we doing this? How are we teaching respect? How are we teaching teamwork? How are we teaching hard work? And then going back to the conversation you and I had last Friday, Greg, about reestablishing what the partnership between schools and home ought to look like. One of the things we discussed was over decades, and Larry, you will have seen this really clearly, and Frank, Nancy will have seen this really clearly. Over the decades, we've taken, or we've allowed responsibilities to shift from the home to the school. And that doesn't work all that well because you only have X number of hours and X number of people, and you can only cover so much stuff. So could using some type of form of a portrait of a graduate serve both as a way to talk more about, here's what we want kids to get at home, parents, here's what partnering with school really looks like. These are things that we're asking you to do at home.
Help us. Partnership with you.
It's got to be the parent. I mean, it's got to be those homes that come into it. I mean, they've got to be, it's got to be, basically a three-way partnership between us, our community, and the business employers out there, and the parents. We try hard with that part of it with the parents already. We know that. And challenges, I guess, that are there with what's happening in homes nowadays and families.
Well, we also have sports programs. We also have, when you think about, you're talking about hard work.
Extracurricular.
All of those kind of things. And speech and debate and all those kind of things. And, I was just struck when I was the speech and drama coach at Paiute that we would go compete with all these little, because we were a little small school, and so when we went to region and state, we had a whole bunch of charter schools. And they literally were a one-trick pony. I mean, the ones that showed up for, I at least thought the ones that showed up for the speech would also show up for the drama, but that wasn't the case. The ones that came for speech, that's all they did. The ones that came for drama, that's all they did. And I think, as part of public school, we have that broad, that teaches our graduates a lot of different things that they may not get from the classroom, but like you say, you work hard when you're on a football team or whatever it is, and you work to gain that, this is how you work with the team, this is how, this is how you deal with tough things. If you don't make the team, or you don't start, or you don't, or you have to come in and try to win a game, and right off the bench, or those kind of lessons that we learn, we have that, and when you go in a debate against somebody else, I mean, it's you against them. It's not just taking a test and passing it. It's, your wits and skills against their wits and skills. And so I think, and I don't know, maybe we don't celebrate enough that we give kids a very broad perspective and broad opportunities as far as life. And it's interesting. I mean, I think of, what's his name? Ballum, And he told his story. His dad was a big football player and everything else. And here he comes along and he wants to sing and stuff. Yeah. And it was just, but he had the opportunities to be able to
give opportunities,
follow that because of, public school and things like that. And he said, even though it wasn't what my dad was interested in, what he did, he supported me in it. And I got those opportunities that really led to him to, a fulfilling career and everything else. And I think all of that stuff, we offer it, And so maybe there needs to be some core part of this, as we look at all graduate, this. Be involved, get out, and we've got enough sports now. I mean, we keep adding new sports, and we've got enough sports that just about anybody can find something.
Well,
plus we've got, drama and speech, the musical and plays that we do, and all these extracurricular activities that we're involved in, service clubs and things like that.
It's kind of like what we're trying to do with the Spirit Squad, with the cheerleaders and the drill team. We're trying to encourage others that maybe in the past haven't.
Right, where you, instead of just one channel, we'll let you branch out.
You've got some other opportunities. I don't know. Going back to, one thing I really appreciate what we're doing as a district is we're providing tools to parents and families that maybe don't have the tools the two-parent household have. I'm thinking about the mental health options and the parenting. I can't think of the names of it, but you know what that we're offering, because reality is the number of two-parent households is nowhere near what it was when I was in school or you were in school. Society's changed, and so
that's what I mean. As we kind of talk about things, we're not able to change society.
No.
So we've got to adjust to what society is giving.
It is the reality.
And then figure out some of this program that could focus, like what percent of our students are in those clubs or extracurriculars.
Well,
because a lot of times it's the same athlete in all sports. Well, it's not like you've got, If you give that are playing three sports,
yeah,
you've got
six
same
good athletes
that are playing those. And so what other, you know, when students aren't athletic, what the experience we had last board meeting with, you know, the Latino club going up to 140 kids and having a gold up. I mean, that's what a fascinating story to share when we're such a diverse school. But nobody knows that outside of the community, because we didn't know about it as a board.
Avid too. Avid's another program that I was thinking.
And I'm not sure that those after-school clubs are not the answer to the problem we're facing with, dare I say, flags or symbols.
Yeah.
That's what an after-school club can be. That can be the purpose of that. Whereas the curriculum and the core is in the classroom, and that's where you're having motivation and learning. And the clubs help individuals feel like they belong to something. I think we're missing a point there, but I'm not sure how we get to that point.
Well, and I think, you know, there's a lot of, I think a lot of kids don't really participate in sports because, you know, by the time you're a freshman in high school, you go to try to crowd for a team. If you haven't had experience in it, you're not going to make it, right? I mean,
what Mitch and Daryl are doing to
try to sponsor these things in the middle school. Maybe we, you know, we do some other clubs and speech and debate or things like that. But, you know, you say, yeah, let's get you started at that age so that you're not coming in cold and going, well, I don't know how, you know, I've never really dribbled a basketball. You're not going to make a basketball team. You know, I'm not really familiar with football. I'm not going to make the football team. And so, you know, giving them those opportunities to say, no, if you want those opportunities at that ages, we're really going to try to give you those opportunities to at least get some experience so that when, you know, if that's a direction that you want to go. And so I think those are great things that we're doing as far as, you know, let's help these kids take advantage of everything that we offer. To really take advantage of it, you do have to start a little bit younger.
You can remember, Buck, I don't think it's possible now, but when we were younger, summer baseball was by school.
Yeah.
I mean, each school, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, each school had a team. And
yeah,
I remember waking up and looking into the clouds in the sky. It was so important.
So here's
Wilson,
so again, this
Ellis, the Bowen played, you know, Adams. I mean, it was,
yeah,
that was the league. It was the elementary schools.
So this kind of takes me back, you know, Frank, your comments back to one of the initial things at the start is, do we need something like a portrait of a graduate, or do we just need to identify some other metrics that we can use to measure our success? For example, what percentage of our students are participating in clubs or sports?
I think that would be a huge eye-opener to where we really are. I mean, we have a lot of clubs. But the Latino in Action group is probably, I would guess, at the top of the chart right now, from what I heard with those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what other clubs have that. But is that because Jeff has just jumped on board and he's
really taken off with
and gotten excited about it? And you know, I know some of our faculty are probably getting assigned to a club just to take an assignment, don't get the same bash and to try to market,
well,
grow, and get everybody out there.
And Latinos in Action is unique because it's a pre, I want to say, not prepackaged, it's a pre-developed program.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, here are the goals, here are the types of things that you're going to do to reach these goals, here's the structure of your club. So it's designed to grow that way.
Yeah.
And most of our clubs are not. They're really just opportunities for kids to come together and hang out with each other.
That's start.
And there's value to that, but it's not going to grow in the same way.
So do you require two or three things of each club, though? I mean, do you require a service component?
Service graduation.
I think that would be one of the things we could talk about. But I think looking at that, does it allow us to say as a board, okay, we're not going to worry about adopting a portrait of a graduate. We're going to, in our work, keep referencing the state's portrait of a graduate and say, yeah, we are completely on board with the fact that these are important characteristics of students to develop. Here are the things that we're going to do in our community to build those, and then you split those up, you know, student parts, academic, you know, success, student engagement in school, and that's participation in clubs, sports, etc., partnerships with the community, and that's to develop mentorships, exposure, all that sort of thing. Yeah, that might be another way to
we're all in this together as parents and schools and community and employers, that, and these are the things we'd like to emphasize with your help, employers or parents. These are the things we'd like to, we're already doing these, maybe help us expand these, maybe there are other areas that I'm just throwing out out there.
How do we go about doing it?
Oh, I like the idea of picking two or three key messages that we want to promote consistently over the next year or the next 2 years that are somewhat in line with this. It may be 3 years down the road we want to go full board with this message, but let's start with just a key component and message. I don't know how the counselor situation is with middle school and they're just worked to the bone, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, they're busy.
Kids in trouble.
So if the student only has one opportunity a year to meet with a counselor, it's pretty hard to promote the pathway message very often and really keep them on scene. So where are they?
But the home room could be part of that, right?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to keep in mind is anything that we want to be addressed systemically, that we want to be, you know, this is just in the water, this is part of our organization, has to be involve every person in the organization. You can't have a conversation that's managed by just counselors or just administrators and have it really get traction, because they don't have the number of opportunities, like you said, Frank. So whatever we're going to emphasize, we have to identify how will every person in the system be part of this conversation. Now, they don't all have to play the same role in the conversation, but there has to be a role for everybody in that conversation, because that's when it really moves.
But going back to what you said, do we identify the purpose and then, or do we do the opposite? We get the help and then the purpose, because we want those people that are going to be involved to help us identify what we're doing. It goes back to what you said earlier. Because I think sometimes in the past, here's what we're going to do, and we tell a staff or a member or a teacher, they don't have the buy-in because they weren't involved in the development of it.
Right.
So how do we, I understand what you're saying, because I agree, it can't be, it's all on the counselors, or it's all on the CTE department for pathways, or it's all on Mitch for extracurricular. So how do we cleanly get that involved?
How do you get everybody involved?
And feel like they've got a say.
I think there are a couple. I think key is one thing Frank said, you pick 2 to 3 messages, and maybe start as one. I mean, this year, our kind of default message that we've ended up on is going to school is important.
Yeah.
Engaging in school is important. And maybe for the 22-23 school year, that's our message. You know, be at school, engage in school. Be at school, engage in school. And that lets us have lots of conversations about why being at school is important and what does it mean to engage in school.
It comes back to this purpose.
Because
maybe the number one, I mean,
lifelong learning and personal growth, hard work and resilience, those two could tie into why you need to be in school.
Well, we all know, you know, if we go with our mission, you're ensuring students leave ready to create a positive future for themselves and their community. It's a lot harder to create a positive future if you don't show up.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, you got to show up. And it's much harder to be successful wherever you show up to if you don't engage. I think we've all seen the difference between individuals who show up to the same place and one of them even chooses to engage and the other doesn't. And there's a difference in how they affect the organization and how the organization is able to help them. But that might be one thing. It's just picking, and that's just, I just pull that out because we've had a lot of conversations about it so far this year. There may be something else that's a better focus, but I think that's one thing in my mind in terms of how we could use it.
You know, academic mastery here should be the foundation.
And we will always do that. We'll never walk away from that.
That's the foundation for everything we're doing.
Yeah, we'll never stop talking about academic mastery.
Well, that's got to be the
development of this wellness idea, self-image and stuff. I think that's all been kind of added to the flagship with that last mental type issue that we decided we needed to include into it. So when I read that book, I took some notes out of it, and I went back and started trying to go through this, and then just went back through the flagship and started saying, you know, we're approaching that here, we're approaching, you know, civics, financial, and economic literacy. I guess maybe I could pick that one right out. But the whole flagship of making sure our teachers are all part of those PLCs and doing things there, the non-negotiables, you know, really attack a lot of these things. States saying, well, this is what we need to do. I mean, the big thing that seems to come out of all of these things is we need to be able to teach these kids to be collaborative, to be critical thinkers, and to be more innovative. That the world out there has changed to where they need to be that way. And I really don't know how you do that, because right now, I mean, kids and people in the world are doing that, and they weren't taught that in school. But I mean, we've got huge innovators in the world out there, and you got people who can look at a problem and come up with a half a dozen options of how do we fix that. And I don't know if you can really, other than if you got a skill set to just, you can do it. I mean, not all of us are going to be great innovators.
There's something out there.
But as a teacher, you try to give them opportunities to collaborate and give them opportunities to critically think and opportunities to innovate and come up with a business. And so the more opportunities, I guess, we can give them is how we... But you're right, there's certain...
I think we're doing that, though.
I think we are. And maybe we just need to communicate it better.
I think... I like what your idea is that we pick two or three messages that lead. So we're already doing mastery and autonomy out of these keys, right? But if we look at the biggest problem amongst teenagers right now, it's anxiety, it's depression, it's suicidal tendencies and thoughts. And most of that all comes from not understanding a purpose. And I'm succinctly tied into this right now because, not only because of teenagers, but because in America right now, we keep talking about teenagers, but one of the highest rates of suicide is among white 65-year-old males. And my brother and I have talked a lot about this because he's a hospital administrator. And the biggest denominator is lack of purpose. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a purpose, you just flounder. Every day is kind of, well, what am I going to do today?
Why am I getting up?
You know, I mean, you're in that retirement phase now, where you and Julie are looking in the summer and saying, this is one of those service things we're going to do.
You've talked about
how much that meant to you.
You find purpose, but you're right.
But
there are people.
But if our kids going through high school right now are questioning what my purpose is, then that's where depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, and all of that package come into play. If we look at the LGBTQ community, that's where their argument is, frustration, is what's my purpose? I mean, yeah, we want to say there is something symbolic that might say I'm accepted, but that's not going to take the place of having a purpose that will drive them into productivity. Maybe just that purpose becomes the one key that we focus in on our message. What's our purpose here? Which means, why do you come to school? You know, why do you engage in these extracurricular activities? Why do you try to, you know, step outside your zone a little bit? Let's create a purpose for individuals and collectivity. And, and the second component that we probably need to be aware of in the back of our mind without saying anything is, this is hard to say regarding the cheerleader thrill team component. We were a little embarrassing the other night compared to other high schools in the valley.
We were. It wasn't at the performance level that we are accustomed to.
And that's where the message is out there that, and you know, Logan I doesn't have the quality. You keep hearing trash talk, which really frustrates me.
And I look at it in the sense that it's the first year we've done it. Hopefully it will improve, but I also look at it as, and it's a double-edged sword. Are those girls that are participating, if they're listening to those messages you're talking about, then it's harmful. But are also some of those girls that have participated in this year that haven't in the past benefiting from it? I can't answer that. I don't know, but I was at the game like you, and I looked out and said, that's a different looking drill team than I've ever seen. And I had the same feeling, because at this stage in young people's lives, they can be brutal.
Yeah.
Whether it be the drill team or football.
So
it's a long night.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but true in society, yeah, that we do measure winning.
Well, there's so much
with a whole lot of this component of what quality means.
That you're not,
and the storytelling component. You know, there's no question we've gotten better and better at it over the last 3 years. I think Shanna does an incredible job trying to get the messages out. But like celebrating the Latino organization that we have, those three that we had come and talk about what their expectations are, what they've become, and how they've completely changed their attitude, is now they've got a purpose.
Yeah, they pretty well.
That's what came out of their collective experience to get to where they are today.
I talked to the Logan High historian of the football game, just taking pictures. He had his sweater on, so I started a conversation with him. And I said, well, so what are your plans? He said, I'm going to go to college. I said, well, where are you going to go? He said, well, I hope to go where my older sisters went. I said, well, where was that? Princeton. I said, really? He said, yeah, my older sister got a degree from Princeton in architecture, and now she's in the Harvard School of Design program getting her master's, and my other sister, I can't remember finance, but I want to go to Princeton. And I said, well, that's cool. But he had a purpose, and his mom works at the U of U and drives every day to go to work while they're here. But he had some direction.
But in that case, then, he must understand what the pathway is, or at least he's going to learn pretty quickly. So we talked about attendance, we talked about engagement, we talked about wellness, self-image, and we talked about pathways. Those all tie into purpose as one of the keys of that overall Utah plan. Simplistically, maybe those are the messages we tie into. I don't know how we are ever going to get back to simplicity.
Simplicity?
Yeah. We are so complex.
It
so many ways.
Everything we're doing with so many.
And we bring it on ourselves a lot of times.
Yeah.
We make things too complex sometimes.
But I wonder if we can, I agree, Frank. I think every time we identify a challenge, we have a tendency to come up with a new solution.
Way to do that.
Even though a lot of the basic things are what promote our long-term success. If you talk to the provosts up at Utah State, we talk about, it's not English 1010, but it's one of those courses. I mean, they have one class that they can use to predict college graduation rate.
It used to be English back in
the world. And it may be English 1010.
You get through my class, you'll stay in school. That was pretty simple on the prof that I had freshman.
They told us when we met with them and we asked them about this, you know, what are we seeing? What do we need to prepare kids for? How do we help more kids persist past freshman year? And they said, it's still just the three R's. It's reading, writing, and math.
Yeah.
That's it.
Literacy.
If you can do those, the students who can do those three things succeed in school. And to your point earlier about the literacy that's needed for, you know, HVAC technicians. And back when I was a middle school principal, the research was showing because of the complexity of the work that's involved, the reading level that's required for an ASC certified technician is higher than the reading level that is required for a college graduate these days. Because of the technical nature of the writing and the complexity of it. So we have to keep doing these three things. As you were talking, Frank, I started drawing just a triangle, and again, I'm not suggesting this is what we do, this is kind of where my thinking's going, with purpose in the middle, purpose and plan.
Yeah.
And then on top, you got skills. What are the skills that are needed to accomplish your purpose? What are you going to engage in? So engagement as part of your purpose. And then how does wellness tie into your purpose? And if we started thinking about those things, what are the skills we're helping everybody develop? How are we helping them engage in school, attend, participate, and then how are we helping them be healthy and well while they're doing it?
To reach whatever.
And if we cut it down and we said, look, if we do these things, if we help every child identify a purpose, we address the skills that are needed to meet that purpose, we help them be engaged in whatever will promote them meeting that purpose, and we help them be healthy and well, they're going to
got a pretty balanced individual.
We're going to get them where we want them to be most of the time. Now, some kids are going to need a lot more support in each of these areas. Some kids are going to need way more with skill. Others are going to need a lot more encouragement to engage because they're not going to have the confidence or whatever to do that on their own. And others are going to have emotional issues where you need to do a lot more to help them be healthy and well. But I look at my kids and I look at, you know, what Pierce needed and what he still needs, and I compare it to what Dayton needed and what Kennedy needed and needs, and they're still in these areas. They're still there, whether it's the skills. You know, Pierce's challenges were the wellness. Skills were not the issue, other than turning in work. But the wellness was the issue. Dayton's issue is not the... Dayton honestly didn't have problems in any of those three areas. You know,
every child's different.
Yeah.
If you can get them to ease it, that's going
to be probably 50%
of our kids.
Good kids, they work hard.
But if they consistently hear, that's the message we're shooting for, to help each of these kids get to. And everything else is supportive of that. But here's the main message that we want you to get out of your education. Pretty balanced individuals.
I think your education,
like you say, without parents at home, only one instead of two, you know, there are just a whole lot of societal factors that we'll continue to deal with. But if somebody has a purpose, they can get through all of those resilience issues.
And like you said, some may need more support than others in different areas.
So if we want to keep it simple enough that everyone, when we talk about it, no one gets lost in the minutia.
Yeah.
No one gets lost in the, okay, if you talk about a portrait of a graduate, saying, okay, is there anybody who can quote all 13 elements? But if you keep it simple enough that everyone can say, yeah, these are the things that we focus on, and in each of these, there's a whole bunch of stuff.
So draw on the board what you...
So our mission statement, we want you to do this, but this, what you're putting on the board, is going to help each student get to...
Because I wanted to have a purpose.
I wanted to bring an idea tonight for us that I'm not exactly sure how that works, but... And then underneath that, what would be the motivational slogan that you can continue to repeat in every classroom, all the way K through 12, that becomes a poster of choice, if you will, for the school district?
How about individual purpose? Not just purpose, but individual purpose. We need to...
Student purpose. This is all in flux, so yeah.
I'm
thinking the why and the how leads to the where. The purpose leads to the why.
We want every student to feel valued.
And the skills.
Those are our biggest challenges.
The academic skills.
What makes them feel valued because of their experience in the classroom?
Right.
So maybe we throw this to do we have a designer, a design class, somebody who's a really creative individual to
come up with something? We need to throw it to faculty too.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna say that your directors.
Start maybe with the directors and then take it down into the schools.
That it's a board.
Let's get more input from people on anything we come up with. I think we need to then move it down into let them say, this, we like this. No, this isn't. How do we fix it? What do we change? What do we call it? What do we keep repeating so that it stays out there in everybody's mind? I mean, we repeat our flagship, we talk about. But I have to go back and read it every so often to remember exactly the different elements of it that we want or trying to make sure in our schools all the time.
We had a little battle at our home over the weekend amongst our grandkids and amongst us as parents and grandparents, that sort of thing, because we were talking about, I've got three grandsons at the Adams School, and we were raving about the blue ribbons on the trees and about what you're one of the best two elementary schools in the state, take pride in that. And what's their theme? And it's not yet.
The power of
yet. The power of yet. So that's where they collectively, as a school, come together. Everybody's trying to get that power. The power of yet. I can't do it now. I can't get this math problem. Yeah. But the answer is just not yet. I'm going to keep working at it. And the message is clear. Not yet, but it's going to come.
We lose those 20 pounds. Not yet.
And I'm trying to remember what Nancy uses up at the Adams School. What does Edith Bone use, Frank, that have you heard? in one of the board meetings? I'm trying to think of what Nancy was telling me.
I don't know that I can tell you.
I haven't heard them say, like, encapsulate everything in a phrase. I mean, conceptually, there's a lot of outdoor.
Maybe Nancy and Jan.
They just
they've got a phrase.
Nancy does?
Yeah. Page.
They've got a phrase that I use. And it starts with literally a burial. I mean, they have a day where everybody wears black. And they bury the word can't. Can't is not in the vocabulary.
Cool.
Of anything they do in their classroom.
Hey, I haven't heard Nate mention anything, so I'm wondering if that is a Nancy and Jan thing.
Yeah, could be. Could very well be. I'll ask her again about it if we got it for some reason. But that was coming up. And consistency was becoming part of the clear message. There's a consistency at the Adams of everybody.
Right.
Is achieving their own target with that.
I mean, if you can come up with a shorter, easier way to remember it, the whole thing with the spyglass, you know, see what might be and then go make it so. You make a plan and then you take action to make it happen. It's not going to happen just because you've envisioned it. You know, you have to take steps. You have to work. You have to put effort in, which is part of the whole pit thing that they use. Yeah. The power of yet is, gosh, I'm stuck down here at the pit. I'm not going to get out of the learning pit just because I say yet. I'm going to say yet, and I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep trying. You don't float out of the pit. You climb out.
But it's very visual.
You can't.
Yeah.
Where, you know, in the school, it's very visual.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Easy, you know, they used to have it out the circle. Mm-hmm. There's something out there behind.
Yeah, it's in the hallways. They talk about it all over.
So it becomes very visual, and that's what every kid.
And now Bridger's doing that. And they've taken, because Candace was one of the teachers at Adams that helped implement the idea of the power of yet.
Mm-hmm.
So now she's taken that to Bridger, and they've done the pit, but they've done it with pictures of Bridger students who were there at the school. Excellent. And then the bear. So that idea is that's traveling.
That's pretty hard to argue with a White House announcement.
It's
had impact.
Is she going to talk about that tonight, Sunday?
I'd be shocked if either Sunday or Marissa didn't talk about the power of yet.
Okay.
That was
because they're on
the
discussion.
Majority. I mean, that was the biggest point in their
presentation,
their application to the governor. I mean, their report, their summary. Yeah. Even the power of yet.
So we're going to celebrate, but then they're coming back on the discussion part of the agenda and discuss what they've done.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm confident that's part of what they'll talk about.
Cool.
Well, I like where we're going.
I was going to ask you, you put a few more policies up for tonight.
Yeah, you got.
When I bring them up and say, okay, this is just one page, I'm going to be okay. I can get through this one.
Y'all were probably missing those.
You should have been the one to have to change everything to red and cross it out.
Yeah. No, I had one, but I thought,
so much. That was a labor persecution.
I'm just getting to that time. But
no, I get it.
There were a few.
There'll be a few more coming.
Yep.
Just updating those.
I'm glad somebody likes to focus on them. Others, because I don't know if I'd have the patience.
We do need to separate out, just a heads up for y'all, we will be doing some stuff to separate out harassment versus sexual harassment in some of our policies, just to provide a little more clarity there.
Okay.
Based on a conversation Melissa and I had today and some training she's doing with the principals, we need to look at a few more things in our safe schools specifically related to bullying.
Oh, okay.
The definition in legal code is way too broad.
The state code.
Yeah. Because traditionally, bullying has either dealt with an imbalance of power in a relationship, and it's been a pattern of behavior over time. They've made it so bullying could be a single instance of a negative interaction between two people, and now that rises to the level of bullying, where typically we've kind of held off on defining something as bullying until you see that it's ongoing and a kid's being targeted and stuff like that. So And the reason why that's a concern is in the state board rule, it gets pretty prescriptive about how you need to respond. And for example, if you get an instance of bullying, you're interviewing the aggressor, you're interviewing the victim, you're interviewing the victim's parents, you're interviewing the aggressor's parents. We're like, wait a minute, if we're doing this every time a third grader says, you're stupid,
you stink, something like that,
we're like, who's the one that's going to be spending all of that time calling parents and interviewing them, saying, okay, your child said this to another child, are they having problems at home, is this something they say frequently? I mean, I just don't see that being practical. So we're working on that and identifying how we support staff in responding to these types of situations without getting sideways with state guidelines. No room in here.
Anne is not coming or going to join us tonight. Okay. She just texted me.
Let's have you state that. You want to state that we're adjourning?
We're adjourning the work session of the Logan City School District Board meeting.
4:33 p.m.
At 4:33 p.m. on September 27th.
Yep.
Thank you.